You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 373 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Blue Beetle number 6, Action Comics 1062, Batman number 143, Green Lantern number 8, and Bodies, season 1 episode 4, Right Up the Wazoo. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. Alright Cletus, first up for DC news. According to TV Line, Superman and Lois has cast Douglas Smith as Jimmy Olsen, Daily Planet photographer for the final season. Per the report, the series version of Jimmy is set to be a 20-something extrovert who is the life of the party at the office, and despite being work colleagues with Clark, he's been unable to get him out of his awkward shell. Unaware of Clark's super secret, Jimmy's still determined to become his pal.
Drew, I'm really conflicted on the incoming season for Superman and Lois. I really liked the last season. It was really good. And there are just so many red flags about this. And the Jimmy Olsen casting is awesome. I like that he's going to be on the show. Like that, I no issue whatsoever with that, Drew. But I'm having a hard time convincing myself that we're going to get the same quality show until I see it. And I really hope that we do. Don't get me wrong. I really hope that we do. But I don't know. There's so many things working against it.
There is. I'm keeping optimistic until we see it. So that's going to be the big thing. When we see it, we'll know. All right, moving on to our next bit of DC news. Max debuts the first trailer for Colin Farrell's The Penguin, which is reportedly set 1 week after the events of Matt Reeves' The Batman. Penguin is slated to premiere this fall.
I can't wait, Drew. I am so excited. So excited for Penguin. Colin Farrell was so good in that character, and really, I mean, with the prosthetics that they put on Drew, it is very hard to tell that that's who that is. He really just disappears into that character, and I can't wait to see what they do with the show.
Same here. We got that trailer. It didn't really reveal that much about what the story was or anything, but it was cool seeing him on the screen. So I'm excited about it, and I'm already thinking I'm going to rewatch The Batman right before that premieres so I can watch The Batman and then go into it, because it's only supposed to be set a week after the event, so I'm excited. All right, well, that wraps up DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Hey, Leah.
Hey, Sean.
You know what now's a good time for?
What's that?
A promo for the Soulforge podcast.
The Soulforge? What's that?
Oh, it's a show. It's a podcast all about sex and dating.
Love and relationships.
Pop culture and movie reviews.
Adventure.
Almost anything you can think of.
Definitely.
What is it?
The Soul Forge.
The Soul Forge podcast.
Think about it.
What if you could bring three experienced producers into your home each week to discuss your favorite movies and the people that made them? That's Tales from Hollywoodland. Your hosts, Arthur, Julian, and Steve, collectively have years of showbiz producing experience. Their weekly show is a fast-paced, fun, and very conversational experience, like spending a good time with your best movie-loving friends and family. Tales from Hollywoodland is available wherever fine podcasts are found. See you at the movies.
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
All right, let's talk Blue Beetle number 6. Victoria Cord's satellite blast was supposed to knock out the Blood Scarab, but it only seemed to ramp him up. Kajida is unable to operate normal functions. Critical systems are rebooting. While Kajida is rebooting, both the green and yellow beetles take on the Blood Scarab. Starfire also joins the fight when both the green and yellow beetles are defeated. When Kajida is finally rebooted, Jaime joins the fight. Javier Basualdo is temporarily able to take control over the Blood Scarab. Kajida senses this and takes over control of the Blue Beetle armor from Jaime and engages termination protocols. Ka-F-Ri has been eliminated. Suddenly, Kajida detects tachyon interference and Jaime disappears. Next issue, the hunt for Ted Kord.
I feel like we're forming the Power Rangers here, Drew.
I thought this was another miniseries, but it looks like it's an ongoing.
Yeah, I was under the impression it was a miniseries too, but like you, Drew, I don't know. The tease for what the next issue is doesn't seem to lend itself to wrapping up a story. But the story has been told in a way that it feels like it's structured like a miniseries. I was left with a lot of questions. Are every single one of the Rainbow Beetles going to be Hispanic? That's fine if they are. I find it increasingly improbable the way that they're doing it. Again, I want to be very clear. I don't care. They can be whatever ethnicity they want. I would have argued it would have made more sense for the Red Scarab to be Egyptian because that's where that character comes from in the original comics. Instead of having it be, a foreign exchange student studying in Egypt? I'm like, again, Drew, I'm not saying it's unbelievable. It's fine. But I do feel like we're finding increasingly ridiculous ways to have it be another Hispanic character get a beetle. Where, like, I feel like, honestly, if they were going to do this Rainbow Corps thing, it would have been best if you just had, like, the whole batch of beetles just land, right? And hit a group of people. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm being too picky there. Again, I get it. I mean, you can make the same argument of like, why are all the superheroes white? I get it. I understand. I just, the story for Javier specifically felt very like they had to come up with a ridiculous excuse to be why it was Javier and not Ahmed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Now, I noticed, I don't know if it was Blue Beetle issue number 7 or 8 I saw coming out. There is an English version coming out, and then there's a Spanish version coming out. I saw that, and I thought that was interesting.
That is cool. I like that they're doing that.
Now, my next question for you, we haven't been really thrilled about this title. I was going to ask you, do we want to keep reviewing it, or do we want to drop it?
I don't know, man. I'm frustrated with the book, Drew, to be honest with you, because I really like the idea of Jaime having an ongoing title. I like Blue Beetle. The modern Blue Beetle, as a character concept, I like Ted Kord, obviously, too, as a Booster Gold fan. I just haven't really enjoyed this series that much, and I find myself frustrated because I'm like, I really want to, like, every issue, I go into it wanting to enjoy it, and then just like this one here, I read it, and I just was like, I just not feeling this.
I'm the same way, so, like, I'm interested in the hunt for Ted Kord, but I'm hoping the story is better than what we've been getting.
Yeah.
I guess for now we'll review the next one and see how it goes. And then we'll decide from there if we want to keep reviewing it or not.
Yep.
All right. Well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Action Comics 1062. Metropolis. The sickness spreads quickly. A plane loses altitude moments after takeoff because the pilots suddenly decide to relax in the cabin while the passengers fly the plane. Multiple fires spring up along the outskirts of the city with more firefighters flocking to the scene. Instead of putting them out, they are starting the fires. At Metropolis General, a brain surgeon readies for surgery to be performed on him by the brain-damaged patient. Every aspect of society is rapidly breaking down, flooding the streets with chaos and impending carnage. This is day one in the city of Bizarro. Atop the Daily Planet, Bizarro Number One looks out over the city and laughs. He grabs his head and then shouts, "Bizarro! I won't let you take my mind!" Suddenly, Bizarro is Superman once again. Superman saves a suicide victim, a plane from crashing, a school bus from hitting a group of children, and puts out fires. The Bizarros hate him for it, shouting that Superman violated their basic rights as Bizarros. They want their rightful leader, Bizarro Number One. Days later, Superman is still struggling to find a solution to Bizarro's magic spell. Batman tells Superman that Dr. Fate has become a Bizarro. Zatanna and Madame Xanadu are keeping him subdued. Other magic users have been called in as well, John Constantine and Blue Devil. Bizarro is in Superman's head. Superman struggles to keep from becoming Bizarro himself. Weeks have passed and everyone in the outside world seems to have changed. Superman is alone and doesn't know how much longer he can hold off the change. He flies to Gotham to find the only sane man in the world, Bizarro Joker. Next issue, Superman and the Joker team up.
Drew, I'm really enjoying this take on Bizarro, you know, kind of exploring, like they said, this is the darkest version of what Bizarro can represent, right? That, like, he's the opposite of Superman, and they do the opposite things, and that can be funny, which is usually the route that the comics tend to take, and which I certainly enjoy. That's one of my favorite parts about Bizarro. But that you can also take it in a much darker direction, that all of the, like, you know, extreme good that Superman and other occupations that we see within this comic represent. What is, like, the dark, evil version of, you know, where could you go with that? And this is a Bizarro that's out for revenge, right? This isn't Bizarro that's just, you know, being a doofus or menacing. This is Bizarro that wants Superman to suffer. And so you're getting the worst possible version of the, you know, what Bizarro can represent. And it's been really fun to read. And it's been fun to see Bizarro being taken seriously as a villain, Drew, without changing what the character is. Like, I don't feel like we're getting the CW Bizarro, for example, right? Where it's a character that technically fits the description, but is really very much its own thing. Like, everything about this is Bizarro. It's just a lot darker than it usually gets with him. But it still fits the mold. And I think is a sign of good writing, that you can look at this character through a different lens, go in a different direction than we normally go, but it still feels very in line with what the character could do.
This is a Bizarro that's lost his whole world, and he blames Superman for it. So what's he do? He turns Superman's world into a Bizarro world. And it's interesting, because now the only sane person is Joker, Bizarro Joker. That's going to be a really interesting team up between Superman and the Joker. I'm looking forward to seeing that take on Bizarro Joker and how they're going to work together to overcome the situation. It's been really good so far. I'm really invested. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Batman number 143. From what Batman can tell, everyone is infected with this virus already. It lies dormant until an auditory signal triggers the physical change. Batman has managed to design earphones that can filter out the decimal range, but he is too late. Gotham is lost. In the past, Batman goes to the bar the Joker was recently in and tracks down the man that Joker left with, Brian Bigling, 22, from the Red Hood gang. Batman tracks him to his apartment, where Batman finds him tied to a chair. The Red Hood gang is there attacking Joker. Joker runs when he sees Batman. In the present, across the river from Ace Chemicals, Batman finds a severed hand and a police revolver, a type the GCPD hasn't used for over a decade. Batman finds a GCPD ring that dissolves in his glove. Something in the skin kept it intact. Suddenly, Joker rises out of the water, asking Bruce if he is ready to end this. Batman points the revolver at Joker. Joker tells him that his blood pressure is tied to a remote device. If it drops from the blood loss arises from a fight, then an alarm will cause all his little Jokers to kill themselves. Batman fires the gun. A flag comes out that states, "Oops!" Batman replies that he saw the flag down the barrel. "You're as predictable as ever." In the past, Detective Jim Gordon questions a dirty cop named Blair. He's their best lead in the Red Hood case. When Blair is taken to his cell, he grabs the guard's gun. Blair is gunned down. Jim realizes Blair was set up so he could be killed. When Jim punches another dirty cop, he gets suspended. Captio trains the Joker just as he trained Batman. He teaches Joker how to withstand pain, how to work through his emotions, and how to turn his body into a weapon. Captio also teaches Joker how to create multiple personalities, which is where the three Jokers come in. In the present, Batman and Joker makes their way to the police department. He finds Catwoman. She has locked up the Bat family because they have all been Jokerized. Joker removes Catwoman's earpiece and she becomes Jokerized as well. Joker frees the Bat family. In the past, Captio has finished training Joker and he is ready to face Batman with no fear. Joker kills Captio. To be continued.
Drew, I really do not care for this style of portrayal of the Joker most of the time. The scene where in the, what we assume is the future, and it's essentially like Joker as this like godlike figure. It's too much for me, Drew. It's just like, it's Batman and the Joker. Like fundamentally, this is the same two characters that, you know, Adam West is chasing around a dude with paint over his mustache. And I'm aware you could have, you know what, I'm aware you can have extremely different interpretations of the character. And the comic even goes into the Joker establishing different personalities for what he needs, which I thought was a cool idea. But, like, it's okay for a comic to have a little fun. Now, I know I just talked about praising Bizarro for going down a darker path, but, you know, it was still at its heart, Drew, that comic was still a comic book in a way that, like, it wasn't apologizing for being a little bit silly. Like, you know what I mean? Like, for as dark as the potential was for that comic to go, ultimately Superman saves every single person in that comic, right? No one actually dies. And there are, like, just, you know, easily identifiable places where it's just straight up funny. Like, yeah, there's the threat of darkness, but it's still funny. It's still as fun as a comic. And it's like, yeah, no, these are superhero characters. And you get a comic like this, and it feels like we need to actually worship at the altar of Batman and Joker. And I'm like, guys, it's okay for them to be comic book characters. Like, we don't have to be reverential to them. It's hypocritical. My opinion, Drew, is definitely hypocritical because a lot of the things that I like about Batman, that where the justification is essentially, well, he's Batman, or he can do that because he's Batman. It works, but usually, Drew, it works like with what Zdarsky did in his first initial story arc, where Batman lands from the moon, right? There's a little bit of tongue-in-cheek there. Like, I don't think, like, Zdarsky definitely portrayed it seriously, but to me, at least, and knowing him as, you know, in other comics that he's done, it felt like there was a little bit of tongue-in-cheek there. Like, isn't this kind of silly but fun that Batman landed from the moon? Like, yeah, that is. You're right. That's really fun. And this one feels like it misses that little bit of not taking itself 100,000% serious, which is what this one was doing. Like, I don't need the Joker to be the god of evil. Like, he could just be a bad guy. That's okay. He could be a really good bad guy. He could be the best bad guy to ever bad guy. But we could, like, just find a little bit of a happy medium there.
I don't care for the story that much. Now, I find it's funny because one of the things I find interesting is the Jim Gordon part of the story. And yeah. I don't know if that's because it feels more grounded in reality a little bit, or it feels more normal, or doesn't feel over the top. I think maybe why I don't like this is that the Joker feels too over the top in this, especially the future stuff with him turning everybody into Jokers. And I don't know. I just don't care for it. Maybe if it was told a little differently, I might like it better. But I have to agree with you on one thing. I thought the idea of the Joker having different personalities was also interesting. That could make sense for the different types of Jokers we see sometimes.
Yeah, so. I did. I like that concept a lot. But again, it was, Drew, I don't love the idea of peeling back the curtain on the Joker as much with, like, I know part of Batman is the, you know, the self-made man and turning himself into this human weapon through sheer force of will. And I understand that logically, if the Joker is supposed to be his opposite, that he would be turning himself into the ultimate villain through sheer force of will, right? I get that. I don't know that I want to see that, though. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like the Joker loses a little bit of something the more of his origin you show and the more of pre-Joker you show of him. Because, like, to me, Drew, the leap from the guy who fell in the vat, but not yet the Joker, to the guy at the end of the comic. It makes sense, right? Because we know who the Joker is, and we recognize that that's the Joker at the end of the comic. And so it fits in that regard. Like, ah, yes, that's the character that I'm very familiar with. But, like, the in-between bit, you know what I mean? I don't know that I need to or want to know that. I think I'd rather just have it be... I feel like part of what makes the Joker scary is it's hard to understand why exactly is he doing it. What caused him to do, you know what I mean? And the more you dig into it and just be like, oh, well, a guy got really, you know, upset that Batman didn't like him and hurt his feelings, so he trained anti-Batman, and that's why we have Joker. Like, that's kind of, isn't that kind of a lame answer?
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? And I'm not saying that the story was bad necessarily. It's fine, but I don't know. I don't know that there is a satisfactory answer there. To be honest with you, I think the best answer is one left to the reader to try and, you know, imagine or figure it out. Like, the more that you spell it out, the less of that sort of kind of, I don't want to say mystical necessarily, but that unknown, the fear of the unknown goes away. One thing I did want to hit on, Drew, was this the issue that was supposed to be the big AI accusations?
Yes, it was.
So I was reading it, think with that in mind, and I got to be honest, there wasn't a page that like really stuck out to me as something that didn't seem drawn by an artist. I will say though, Drew, there were a lot of different art styles that popped up throughout the book, more than I feel like artists were credited in the comic. Do with that what you will.
Alrighty then. All right, well, let's move on to our last issue for this week, Green Lantern number 8. Razor explains he was back on Odom when the blue power battery exploded. Soon after, pirates came. They enslaved some of the people and killed others. Razor was able to hide on one of their ships until it came to Earth. Razor heard rumors that the power batteries on Samolt and Korriger have been eliminated as well. Someone is targeting central power batteries all over the universe. At Razor's insistence, Hal Jordan tries multiple times to leave Earth and is unable to. Whatever is keeping him on Earth, it is not his will. Carol Ferris comes to Hal's trailer pissed that he didn't contact anyone to let them know he was okay after his fight with Sinestro. Carol becomes even more upset when she learns that Hal is leaving. Hal responds stating that all she has to do is ask him to stay. Instead, Carol states she has to go and drives away. Hal and Razor go to Greenwich Village in New York to see Madame Xanadu. She states that she has been expecting them. Sinestro came to see her about a month ago, wanting to get off the planet. Someone or something has blockaded this part of the universe, both physically and magically. Madame Xanadu tells Hal to go to the place he felt the power, and it will grant him entry. Hal explains that when he was fighting Sinestro, there was a place in Spain he felt an energy surge. Suddenly, three Green Lanterns from the United Planets appear searching for Razor. Hal Jordan engages them in battle. One of the Green Lanterns is able to use the yellow energy of fear, while another one harnesses the blue energy of hope. They are able to capture Razor and leave for Oa. Hal Jordan goes to Spain and finds the place where it felt like his ring was being supercharged. A hole in the ground opens up underneath him. It could be a way to get off world, or it could be a trap. Next issue, The Secret of the Green. We also had a backup story in this called Good Talk. Kyle Rayner has created a construct of Radu's coffee and his old girlfriend Alex DeWitt. He tells her that something is off with the emotional spectrum, but he doesn't know what it is. He believes that someone or something is trying to disrupt it, maybe even destroy it. Green Lantern Joe Mullen shows up. Kyle explains he needed some time alone to think. Joe states that she has been looking for Kyle. She has an idea what really is going on with the United Planets and the whole Lantern takeover, and Kyle's not going to like it. Kyle tells her to explain it on the way to wherever they are going. Kyle and Joe are onto the truth behind the United Planets, and next issue, it's Jessica Cruz's turn. I am loving this title, Cletus. Just loving it.
I totally agree. and the reveal of these United Planet Lanterns, and they're not even calling themselves Green Lanterns, United Planet Lanterns, and their robes sort of seem to channel the whatever spectrum they need to pull up at the moment, which clearly has corresponded to destroyed power batteries, deepens the mystery, Drew. I love this. I love that we're getting back to the full emotional spectrum. I know I'm a hypocrite because I just criticized Blue Beetle's Power Rangers thing, but there's a lot more depth to what the Green Lantern world did with the different rings. And it was very frustrating when almost immediately after John's finished his run, people went out of their way to refocus on entirely just Green Lantern, as if that was what made the book successful. I love that we're bringing back other Lantern cores, Drew. I love that he didn't have his ring, but having a Blue Lantern involved in the story, I felt like I was back in the John's era, which I've felt this whole run so far, Drew, which is the highest compliment I can give a Green Lantern book, considering, in my personal opinion, it's the greatest run of Green Lantern comics. And to feel like I'm reading that era is, like I said, it's the highest compliment I can give. I'm so intrigued by these new lanterns and their ability to flip back and forth between different emotions. That's really cool. I'm intrigued at the backup also teasing that we're going to get Jessica Cruz back. It's been a little bit since we've seen her. The last we saw, Drew, correct me if I'm wrong, she was a Yellow Lantern, right?
That is correct. I have a feeling that's getting wiped under the table. I think when we see her next.
Or we missed something with that.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see what she's up to. I am curious to see if Baz exists. I'm loving this. It's so good. I'm so excited because those Green Lantern books, I've said it a lot, but that was really what got me into comics. Like, I read comics, but that's what got me into them. It was such a compelling story that I just couldn't wait to get the next issue, the next book of. Oh my gosh, this has been so, so good. I've wanted a book like this since John Stopp.
Yeah, I know. It's awesome, and I'm really enjoying it. So not only do I look forward to reading this one every month, I'm looking forward to the John Stewart one because it's just as good. So it's great to have good Green Lantern back. All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk bodies.
Hey, Joe.
Hey, Tony.
Do you like ads about podcasts?
You know it.
How about ads about Doctor Who podcasts?
Even better.
Well, you're in luck, because this is an ad about a Doctor Who podcast.
Wow, I love it.
And you'll love us, the Watchathon of Rassilon, a podcast about Doctor Who.
I'll buy 12.
Actually, it's free.
I'll buy 13, then.
What's new on the 42 cast? Let's ask my co-hosts.
We're talking about Doctor Who.
Comic book shows and movies.
And we're talking about all things Star Trek.
And so much more.
Check us out on Google Play, Stitcher Radio, and iTunes.
It's only on the 42 cast, your ultimate answer to fandom, geekiness, and everything.
So Nathan, when are we finally talking Babylon 5?
And we're back. Let's talk Bodies, Season 1, Episode 4, Right Up the Wazoo. 2023. Detective Hassan has found the tattoo scratched into the brick wall along with the name Hillinghead. Research finds an Alfred Hillinghead from the 1890 Electoral Register. He was a Whitechapel cop, detective inspector. Detective Hassan visits Clive in the archives. They find records going all the way back to 1890. They look under L for Long Harvest Lane. They find a newspaper article and pictures of the exact same victim that Detective Hassan has been investigating. Clive states this is ringing a bell. Clive comes back a few minutes later with another case from 1941. Same victim again. It was Charles Whiteman's last case. Detective Hassan remembers Elias stating that bodies had come before. 1890. Inspector Hillinghead tells Henry Ash the investigation's over. He heads home and lies to his wife about a brawl in the cells. His daughter Polly knows he is lying. Hillinghead tells her that she should be a detective. 1941. Sergeant Whiteman learns from Kath that the chief inspector had a witness come forward saying she heard two voices talking in Lee Cousins' flat before the gunshot. Calloway thinks Kozin's death might not have been a suicide after all, which means maybe he was framed for the body in the boot as well. He's putting more men on the case. There was a mention of finding that Yiddish girl again, with a proper interpreter. Sergeant Whiteman returns home with Candy to find the Yiddish girl, Esther, playing music loudly and dancing around the apartment. Whiteman looks out the window and spots someone watching them. Whiteman gives Esther a ticket to Inverness in Scotland. 2053. Detective Maplewood observes one of Professor Gabriel Defoe's lectures. The detective asks a question about one of his banned papers on the interaction of dark matter with the Deutsch particle, proving that the creation of a naked singularity was possible, that time travel was going both backwards and forwards is possible in theory. After the lecture, Professor Defoe tells Detective Maplewood that he didn't invent a time machine and he doesn't know any terrorists. He only knows that he doesn't want to be murdered. He asks for her to protect him. Detective Maplewood agrees, but she will choose the safe house. 2023. Detective Hassan has the fingerprints run from the gaslight in 1890 that Inspecting Hillinghead discovered. Detective Hassan talks with her boss off the record in a local pub and shows him the evidence she has about the two other murderers from the past that were identical to hers. He calls it an X-file. Detective Hassan states if it is a prank, they need to find out who is laughing. 1890. Inspector Hillinghead visits Henry Ash and tells him that he loves his family more than anything and he will protect his family. Being with Henry scares him to death, but he needs him, and they have another romantic encounter. Ash tells Hillinghead that the newspaper is running a front page article on Harker and his collusion with the Greater London Police. They are naming him a suspect. Henry notices a smudge on Hillinghead's glasses. A fingerprint? Hillinghead states they might still have Harker. 2053. Detective Maplewood brings Professor Defoe back to her own apartment as a safe house. She promises to catch the person responsible, even if that person is himself. 1941. An air raid hits Sergeant Whiteman's apartment. Esther and Whiteman flee the building and find shelter in a subway tunnel. 2023. Detective Hassan learns that Sir Julian Harker was Hillinghead's original suspect. Andrew Morley's attorney, Philip Dust, was from Harker's Legal, which was founded by Sir Julian Harker in 1894. After Andrew Morley left the police force, he had been employed as a security guard by Harker House. 1941. In the subway tunnel, Whiteman spots the man who is searching for him and Esther. Whiteman goes searching for the man, while Esther stays behind with an old woman who has also taken shelter. The old woman shows Esther her locket, which has a picture of her family inside. It is a picture of Inspector Hillinghead, his wife, and his daughter Polly as a baby. The woman states her name is Polly. Whiteman investigates a dark tunnel. The man who has been watching him comes up from behind and stabs Whiteman. There is a struggle and Whiteman kills the man. Whiteman finds his ID and discovers the man is from the Greater London Police. 2023. Detective Hassan enters the Harker House by breaking a window. She finds an old record player and plays the record. It states, "You'll have to learn to live with uncertainties. I will tell you what you could not know otherwise. Ensure you remember this name, Iris Maplewood. You shall need her. Maplewood will get you as far as you have to go. But remember," and then it cuts off. Detective Hassan has to stop playing the record. She hears someone enter the house. She hides. It is Andrew Morley. He knows that Detective Hassan is there. He states they knew she would come. 1941. The subway is being evacuated after the all clear. Sergeant Whiteman comes across the old woman who tells her that Esther insisted on waiting for him. The old woman tells him that he is a lucky man and calls him by name. Know you are loved. Sergeant Whiteman discovers Esther dead, poisoned. 2053. Lorna Danette comes over again and states she fell asleep with the window open. Her cat Bella got stuck on her side of the ledge again. Professor Defoe leaves the apartment while Detective Maplewood is distracted. She chases after him and arrests him for suspected terrorist activity. Lorna hits Detective Maplewood with a stun gun from behind. Lorna tells Professor Defoe to take her to chapel. 2023. Andrew Morley takes Detective Hassan to a room in Harker House that has several dead bodies of Professor Defoe displayed in cases. He explains that Elaine's family worked for the Harkers since year dot. Maids and butlers, so they knew the truth. They knew a terrible thing would need to happen to bring about the future. Andrew Morley locks Detective Hassan in a room. Man, what another great episode, and some of the reveals we got this episode.
Yeah, the Polly one. It was funny, Drew, when the old lady sat down and offered the chocolate, I was like, that sure seems like that's the woman on the phone, because we had gotten incomplete views of her before. And sure enough, that was confirmed later, about 5 minutes later in the episode. The seeming reveal, Drew, that Hillinghead's daughter, also, that's really interesting. And there are so many gears turning, Drew. I know last week I mentioned I wondered if potentially we were getting different time travel plots. And I feel more certain that we are this episode, Drew, especially with what we got in the future. I think there are two different time travel things going on here. I think there's one that set up the sort of dystopian dictatorship that we're seeing in the future, and I think there's another one trying to undo it.
I think you're exactly on point with that, because that's what it felt like to me, too. And it's so, everything is so intertwined and interesting. I mean, every scene is important. Oh, the reveal of Polly, that was great. When she gave her the candy, I was like, oh crap, that's the lady that's been talking with Sergeant Whiteman. And then when she gave her candy, I was thinking, oh man, I bet that's poisoned. Sure enough, it was. So she came to take care of the girl herself. She knew Whiteman didn't take care of her, but she doesn't really punish Whiteman. She just takes care of him. Obviously she still needs him. Mm-hmm. And the fact when she opened that locket and showed it was the Hillinghead family, I was like, dang, you know, another weaved storyline going on. It makes me think of the movie Frequency, when Hillinghead put his name on that brick, and then Detective Hassan sees it in the future, and she's the one that figures out about the bodies in the past. I like that a lot too, because they were able to dig up everything in the archives. Very interesting. Oh man, this is such a great, it's a great show.
Oh my goodness, it is so good. It is so good. It is so hard to just watch one episode too. Like, all I wanted to do was just play the next episode.
Ah, the cliffhanger. Love it.
I know.
But yeah, I'm really enjoying the show a lot. So, I don't know about you, but I actually watched it earlier than I normally do.
I didn't, only because I think if I watched it too early in the week, I would just end up watching. I would, like, a few days later, I'd be like, oh, I'll watch the next one too.
Self-control.
I want to be, I want my reactions to be honest. Like, I have not watched ahead, so any speculation on my part is completely blind. I've not read the comic, although I am absolutely going to read the comic once we finish the show. I'm buying this comic.
I know. The comic's got to be really good, too. I'm curious how close the adaption is.
So yeah, I'm very curious, too.
I'm guessing it's pretty close.
I'm curious to find out. I don't want to find out until I finish the show, because I want to be surprised by, you know, the developments in the four episodes that we have left. But like I said, like 100%, I'm going to my local store, seeing if they have it, seeing if they can get it. Yeah, super excited.
All right, well, that wraps up another episode. Do you have a shout-out, Cletus?
Yeah, so in this Green Lantern issue that we read this week, we had references to multiple Lantern Corps in it. Obviously, the Blue Lantern Corps and their lantern being destroyed on Odom was a big, you know, a big plot point. We also had a reference to the Red Lantern's homeworld and their lantern being destroyed as well. And obviously, all of that comes from Geoff Johns' run that we've talked about repeatedly when reviewing this Green Lantern title. But I wanted to shout out specifically the volume Rage of the Red Lanterns, which is issues 26 through 28, and then also 36 through 38. And I know that sounds a little confusing, but in between those issues, Johns did a redo of Hal Jordan's origin, and that got collected into its own book and is obviously its own story, which is why there's those jump in issue numbers. But the collection of it, again, Green Lantern Rage of the Red Lanterns, has I think there's a sneak hint preview of the Blue Lantern Corps being formed in an issue earlier than this book, but the first time you really see the Blue Lanterns in action is in this book, and the first time the Red Lanterns are established as a threat and as new characters, especially Atrocitus, is in that Rage of the Red Lanterns book as well. It's pre-Blackest Night, obviously, because Johns is still setting up all of the different Lantern Corps. That was right about when I was catching up to being current. I think I don't know if I've mentioned this on the podcast before, Drew. I was wanting to get into comics, and I had found the Sinestro Corps War and bought that and loved it. And I was like, oh my God, this is really good. I want to read more. And this is after I had read the Emerald Twilight and New Dawn, you know, establishing Kyle Rayner. And so I started going back and slowly, I was in high school working at Burger King, so my budget was limited, but I slowly started acquiring these volumes. And Rage of the Red Lantern, I think, was pretty close to when I was catching up to being current with Johns's run. So it's really good. Obviously, you know, it makes the most sense if you're reading the whole Johns run, but if you're wanting just a little snippet of when a lot of these characters were getting introduced, it's a good one to check out.
I remember when I read the run, I was reading Green Lantern. I think I was reading Green Lantern. And what was the other? There was two titles. Well, I think the Green Lantern's title started off first, and then there was a second title where I started reading them together.
There was Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps, I believe, was the name of the second title for most of it. I mean, it changed. There were times where there were three, but for a big chunk of the run, there was Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps.
Yeah, I remember when I was reading them simultaneously, where I started one and then the other one picked up and I started just reading them back and forth. I mean, I thought I remembered them bouncing back and forth a little bit, but also the stories contained in each were complete stories, if I remember right. I don't know. I had fun reading both of them. Let's just put it that way. Great run of Green Lantern. If you've not read it, I highly recommend checking it out.
Yeah.
All right, and for my shout-out, I'm going to shout-out about Indiana Comic-Con, because I went this weekend, and I had a blast. One of my highlights was I got to meet Tom Welling from Smallville, and I got his autograph. I also got to meet Tom Cavanaugh. Harrison Wells, Reverse Flash from the Flash television show. It was awesome meeting him. I got some art from an artist I usually buy art from every year at Indiana Comic-Con, Tony Santiago. He had a picture of Reverse Flash, and then, like, behind him, a picture of Wells. And I had Tom Cavanaugh sign that, and I got it framed. So it's hanging up in my office now.
That's awesome.
So it was great meeting him. Right next to him was Danielle Hannenbaker. You know, they had so many celebrities this year. I couldn't afford to get autographs from everybody, so. But I heard her over there talking and stuff, and she was really nice and sweet. Now, they had a panel together, and that panel was my favorite panel out of the convention. For some reason, they didn't have it in the main panel hall they were using, the big panel hall. They put it in a smaller one, and the room was packed with people standing and sitting in the walls and in the doorways. This room got packed. We were lucky we got there and got front row seats. So, but the chemistry between Tom and Danielle was great. You could tell they'd worked together for a while. It's funny because Tom would be talking about stuff and he'd talk about an episode or something, and Danielle will chime in and say, "Oh, that's season one episode, blah, blah, blah." Or, you know, she'd correct Tom She's like a freaking encyclopedia of knowledge. And I found that very funny. She was very sweet and kind. And it was great. Now, one thing that was funny was Tom was talking and telling a story. And there was this kid dressed as Flash, right? He had asked a question or something at the microphone. And when he was done, Tom started talking about some story or something, and all of a sudden that kid just runs right by the stage. And he stops and laughs because, you know, the Flash just went zooming by. Now, another fan had a question for him. He wanted Tom to say, "Run, Barry, run." So Tom had that little kid in the Flash costume come back up to the stage, and he goes, "Run, Barry, run," and has the kid run back to his family. It was freaking hilarious. And then another fan comes up and wanted him to kill him with the vibrating hand. So he had him come up to the stage and he killed him with his vibrating hand. It was so awesome. It was such a fun panel. I loved it. One of the other panels I went to, they had Christian Haydenson and Rosario Dawson. So we had Anakin Skywalker and Ahsoka for a panel. Now, of course, that was in the big room. It was actually, they did that panel like at 8 p.m. at night. It was after hours. It was freaking packed. And, of course, you had to buy special tickets for it, which, you know, I wasn't going to pass that up. So that we went to that. That was great listening to them. And I didn't realize that they've actually known each other for a long time. Apparently, they went to the same acting school or were in the same class or something. So they knew of each other way before working together. So I thought that was awesome. But they had a good rapport too. That was also great. That was my second favorite panel. And then I also went to the Smallville panel with Tom Welling, who played Clark Kent on the show. John Snyder was there, who played Jonathan Kent, who was also Bo Duke from the Dukes of Hazzard that I used to watch when I was a kid. And they also had another actress that was on the show for one of the seasons. She had been Lex Luthor's girlfriend. She was also there. I can't remember the actress's name, but I know her face. So, you know, that was a great panel to listen to, too. I just had a fun time. I got some artwork. I got some T-shirts. I got this cool Batman poster that I got that I'm going to be using for the Bat Chums podcast. Because it's going to be right, I put it right behind me in the office. It's got the Batman from Batman 66. It's got the Adam West Batman. It's got the Michael Keaton Batman. It's got the Batman from Nolan series. It's got that Batman. It's got the Ben Affleck Batman and then the most recent Batman from the Batman. And their Batmobiles. So it's a pretty cool poster. So yeah, I just had a great time at Indiana Comic Con, so. All right, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach us at our feedback line, 317-455-8411. Leave us a message, text us, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming up next week, we've got Batman, Superman, World's Finest. We've got Batman, Catwoman, Green Lantern, War Journal, Nightwing, Titans, Wonder Woman, and of course, our next episode of Bodies. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
In brightest day,
in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power, Green Lantern's light.
I'm off.
Where are you going?
I've got to go punch a clock with my other boss.
I can see where this is going to be a long commute.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.